Thomas Zwick was a compact bear of a boy, a few months older than me. In college, we had settled into an instinctive comradeship. Half Italian, half pure Germanic Scani. Tom had disliked me at first, then mysteriously decided I was good. Could be one of his boys. I had been very shy then around his girlfriend, who had dark wisps of hair and a beautiful face, as soft and malleable as a baby's. This, paired with an alarming kindness, left me barely able to speak. Tom, I was comfortable with. At some basal level of emotion, we were alike, even though Tom was a spiky version of what we called a bro, a man who would not veer from a masculinity at once laid back and entrenched. He lived in sweats, listened to death metal when he was not listening to yacht rock, lifted weights daily to a podcast on Ingles, managed with good humor the flares of his irritable bowel syndrome. He gave good hugs. He called me his dude. I loved that. In July, Peter said that we needed a new junior consultant on the project, another me. I forwarded his email on. Tom was unemployed then, still living 90 minutes away in our college town, going to free concerts at the terrace, taking meandering bike rides around Madison's lakes. His inability to find a job startled me. He was the smartest person I knew. I comprehended at a technical level what a recession was, but not what it meant, truly meant, for the people tumbling into its maw. Some half of my generation never recovered. "Thanks, my dude. We'll think on it," Tom replied. And I, in my sparsely furnished apartment, felt my anger flare. I'd reached out in a bid to cement friendship beyond graduation and $1 drinks at bars and burgers at the plaza. In remembered fondness, knowing he needed the job and that he was from around here. He, like me, unlike our most forceful savvy friends, did not seem ready yet to flee Wisco for the coasts. "Cool," I wrote back. "You do that." So far, being a slut had returned mixed results. And I suspected that, like swimmers with small feet or curvy ballerinas, I was not built for the championship leagues. There was some part of me too sensitive for it, and I was not yet confident I wanted that to die. At the same time, I had an opposing instinct, this counterweight of anxious hunger, like a timepiece, ticking always. I made myself a dinner of saru and box origin idli. I masturbated for hours. Then I walked an aimless zigzag around the apartment, avoiding the open question of a shower. I had bought a stack of books on the history of Milwaukee, thinking they would help me unlock this stocky city with its emptied streets. These I had not opened. I looked through the introduction of one doorstopper tome, turned some pages, and impatiently thumped it down beside me on the floor. On my phone, I read an article about how, in certain cultures, there are no separate words for the color green and the color blue, and if you showed someone a grass-hued paint swatch next to the one color of summer sky, they would say these were the same. Different shades of one thing. My phone buzzed. A green question mark bubble hung from its ceiling. It said, "Amy, downstairs." Amy was the property manager of the apartment Peter was putting me up in. She lived, as noted, below me. When I had moved in, she had stood outside and watched me struggle alone. She had an asymmetric haircut, one half razored close to her scalp, the other a dark red swoosh. Maroon, comma, ending at her jutting chin. A frowning face, thin grooves in it. The haircut made me feel strangely hopeful.